Ask about Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Phil Shook, and he'll be answering your most important questions on Mexico's Grand Slam Expressway. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we are broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Phil a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 48 hours after the show ends. If you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Phil Shook about Mexico's Grand Slam Expressway. The Federation of Fly Fishers needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. It is involved in the Mangrove Recovery Initiative in Florida, in the Trout of the Desert Southwest Initiative to help recovery of rare native trout, the Endangered Fisheries Initiative, and is helping to prevent the introduction of harmful aquatic species to new waters with their Clean Angling Pledge. The Federation won national conservation awards for its efforts. To continue this great work on behalf of all fly fishers, the Federation needs to increase its membership. It needs more concerned anglers willing to join in support of such projects, and by doing so, give something back to the sport that has given so much to each of us. Join the Federation of Fly Fishers today and help support their fine work. For more information, go to the Federation website at fedflyfishers.org. That's fedflyfishers.org. Before we introduce Phil, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we're going to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for the link under Phil's section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Phil's book, Fly Fisher's Guide to Mexico, courtesy of Wilderness Adventure Press. And if you'd like to see more about what Wilderness Adventure Press has to offer, go to wildadvpress.com. That's wildadvpress.com. Now, here's how you can win Phil's book. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. And the question is going to be about something we talk about during the show. And you must submit your answer along with your name and location using the text box on our homepage. So listen closely, type fast, and take good notes, and maybe you'll win Phil's book. Tonight our guest is Phil Shook. Phil is a Texas native and a nationally known fly fishing writer and instructor. He first traveled to Mexico as a boy with his family in the 1950s. He recalls the thrill of seeing flights of parrots overhead as his family made its way down a jungle road and across a remote river to a beach hotel at San Blas on the Pacific coast. A few years later, at the age of 15, he made another long driving trip into Mexico with his father in a 1956 Chevy Camaro carrier pickup. This time, they took along a 10-yen skiff in the truck bed so that they could sample the fishing at a number of coastal stops from Guaymas to Mazatlan. In more recent years, he has had the opportunity as an angling writer to visit and write about some of the best lodges and meet many of the best fleet operations, outfitters, guides, and captains in Mexico. Phil's angling and traveling stories have appeared in Field & Stream, Outdoor Life, Fly Fishing Saltwaters, Fly Tire, Fly Rod & Reel, American Angler, Fly Fisherman, Saltwater Sportsman, and other magazines. He is the author of 4 fly fishing guidebooks, including the most recent, Fly Fisher's Guide to Mexico. His outdoor writing, angling, and traveling assignments have taken him from Cape Cod, Massachusetts, to Cabo San Lucas, Mexico, and to Hudson Bay, Manitoba, to Caracas, Venezuela. He is also an author of The Fly Fisher's Guide to the Northeast Coast and Fly Fisher's Guide to Texas. He has received the Arnold Gingrich Memorial Award and the Silver King Award from the International Federation of Fly Fishers for contributions to the literature of fly fishing. He is a member of the Outdoor Writers Association of America and a past director of Texas Outdoor Writers Association and the Southeastern Outdoor Press Association. He's an active volunteer with Project Healing Waters Fly Fishing. Well, Phil, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thank you, Roger. It's great to be here.
Well, glad we were keeping our fingers crossed, folks, because Phil's down in Houston area, and they were getting a lot of weather down there, so he was a little concerned about our connection, but the storm has passed, at least for the moment, until it probably swirls around and comes back at you again another way. You never know, huh?
There's always another one coming from the Gulf
yeah.
or from Mexico or some direction, so it's best to look over your shoulder.
Okay, good, good. Well, hopefully we'll have an hour and a half here where we can just squeeze in a good show here. So
terrific.
We got lots of ground to cover. Of course, your book covers really the total of Mexico, and we're just going to focus on a small part of that Quintana Roo, state of Quintana Roo area, and actually, even a segment of that because it's just such a vast area of fishing that can be done down there. So, so this state of Quintana Roo, first of all, tell us where is this in the world? Because we do have, a worldwide audience here, and
sure.
not everybody's familiar with Mexico. So kind of describe where it
sure.
is, and we'll go from there.
Sure. Well, I think Quintana Roo is one of the best places to start. We're talking about a huge country. There's like seven coasts, all kinds of opportunities for anglers and fly fishers. But Quintana Roo is one of the three big states in the Yucatan Peninsula. Now, the Yucatan Peninsula is, if you head south from Texas down Mexico's east coast along the Gulf of Mexico, the country suddenly takes a dog leg to the left, to the east, into the Caribbean, and that is the Yucatan Peninsula. Three large states, and here there are old Mayan cities like Merida, founded in 1542, and new resort communities like Cancun, which was created in 1974. But Quintana Roo is ideal for angling and fly fishers because it has a 240-mile coastline with many excellent features, and many of these have been discovered. It's very popular. They have three large bays, Ascension Bay, Espiritu Santo, and Chetumal. You have broad bonefish flats. You have mangrove shorelines and creeks. You have small islands just off the coast like Cozumel. You have ocean flats, cenotes. These are sinkholes in the middle of the bays, caves, jungle lagoons, Caribbean beachfront. So you have a wonderful opportunity, a lot of choices when you choose Quintana Roo and its gateway city, Cancun, as a fishing destination.
Now, we're talking about kind of focusing on the Grand Slam for what you call Highway 307, which is the highway that kind of follows the coast on down.
Right.
Now, what is Roy Fukushima in Orange, California, want to know, what do you consider the Grand Slam of this area?
Well, it is three of the most sought-after and the glamour fish, the tarpon, bonefish, and permit, which in this part of the world and in the tropics, in Florida and other places, is kind of the self-appointed Grand Slam. They're a challenge to land. They're beautiful game fish. And so that is the situation here in the Yucatan, in these bays, where you will have an opportunity in a trip to get shots at all of them. So the glamour fish would be the tarpon, the bonefish, and the permit, and then but the snook and barracuda, snapper, jack crevalle are also part of the adventure. But those are the big three if you fished in the Keys or if you fished in the Bahamas and Mexico, that this part of the world, those would be recognized as the Grand Slam species.
Now, and we won't really get into this, but I thought you might want to mention, since we're talking about Quintana Roo, is the other fishing opportunities. Maybe you can just talk briefly about along this coast. That,
sure.
More blue water opportunities and so forth.
Right. Well, there are two gateways. Cancun is one of them, and Merida is the other in the Yucatan. And they really are amazing in the opportunities they offer the fly fisherman and the light tackle angler, because if you fly into Merida, it's a short drive, about a 75-mile drive to Campeche, the capital city of the state of Campeche. And that has become very popular with fly fishermen. It's a very attractive historical city with Mayan, pirate, and Spanish history, and a beautiful walled city. And that's very popular for fishing for the baby tarpon. And so that is another excellent destination. But out of Cancun, you have many options. We're going to be talking tonight about Highway 307, which goes the 240 miles south down through the Riviera Maya to the border with Belize. But in Cancun, you can actually, you have some blue water opportunities that are also very attractive to fly fishers with the tackle that we have now. It's places like Isla Mujeres, which is only a taxi ride to the ferry, which gets you to that offshore island just off Cancun. You have a chance to raise or hook or land a white marlin, sailfish, dorado, blackfin tuna. There are times of the year, king mackerel with fly tackle. There is within a day trip or a several-hour trip through the northern north of Cancun, through some of the northern small communities, to a jumping-off point, a ferry that takes you to Isla Holbox. And this has become very popular in recent years for larger tarpon that are kind of in a bay where they, during certain times of the year, beginning in the spring and through the heart of the summer, these larger tarpon come through. And this is a very popular place. And down in Cozumel, off Cozumel, you not only have, back in Quintana Roo, you not only have some flats there for bonefish and the big three, but it's also a very good launch point for blue water fishing. So that gives kind of an overview of the many options that a fly fisher will have on subsequent trips, on different trips that they might take. Now, most everyone, I mean, starts by going to one of the remote lodges, bonefish lodges, in the Riviera Maya and the Siancan biosphere. There's many famous lodges on Ascension Bay. So that might be the starting point for many, many fly fishers, but there are other options that are very exciting also.
So you're no matter where you're going down the coast there, you're pretty much flying into Cancun to get there,
yes,
right?
Cancun is the gateway city. It is a big, modern international airport with all kinds of services. It's exciting when you first make your first trip to Cancun because you make the approach to the airport, you look out the window, and you see this incredible turquoise water. You see the jungle. You can see the dark reefs defined, dark black reefs, and then when you come out of the front door of the airport, you're hit with that tropical air, and you look around, and there's a number of people, outfitters, and guides from the lodges waiting to pick up a fly fisher. So it's pretty exciting if you're going down there on that for that purpose.
Okay. Roy Fukushima from California again asked, what is the best time of the year as far as fishing and weather down in this area?
Yeah, that's always a very good question. I think this is a year-round fishery. The only time that you're really shut out, of course, is if you have a big tropical storm or a hurricane. Now, the lodges themselves have, they kind of dictate the best times. They want to be open the best times when they can get their clients. So they will probably have periods, for example, I know that like March through May is a prime time for one of the lodges, I believe it's Palmetto Lodge in Punta Allen there on Ascension Bay, where they know that that is kind of a migratory period for permit, and they will be open during that period and encourage their clients to come. And then they'll take a couple of months off during the heart of the summer and then reopen later in the fall because they think this is prime time for permit, and which is kind of the big game hunting of fly fishing and become very popular in recent years. So the lodge might dictate what is the prime time. Now, there are lodges further down in the Costa Maya, which they have the options. They have jungle lagoons that they can fish that are on the inshore side of the Caribbean, and they can trailer boats down to Chetumal Bay or north up to Espiritu Santo. So they will be able, if you've got wind coming at an unfavorable direction for one bay, they will be able to get you to another. So the best way is that when you decide when it's best to go is to check and see what is the optimum species and what the lodge owners and guides think about it. But other than that, I went down with my family in January, and we stayed in Tulum, which is about 80 miles south of Cancun. It's a gateway to the Tian Can and Ascension Bay, and we stayed at a hotel on the beach, and there was very good snook fishing. And also we went over to Cozumel, which is just to the north, the island off Playa del Carmen, and we had some very good baby tarpon bonefish action. So that was in the wintertime. I've been in the heart of the summer in Holbox up in the northern end of the state, and the tarpon fishing has been very good. So I would say it is pretty much a year-round fishery, but I would check with the lodge owner in planning kind of a peak time to go.
Okay, great, great. Since you brought it up, Geraldo in Boise asked, in the event of weather that limits fishing options, for instance, strong winds out of the wrong direction, cold fronts, et cetera, which of the three bays that you just mentioned are likely to provide the most productive fishing or most protected? Or does it really matter?
Is, yes, again, a very good question. You know, I would leave that in the hands. And again, barring a real heavy blow, you know, when you're in the Caribbean, you're going to have wind is your senior partner there. So you hope for the days when you have light seas and light offshore drift and you have beautiful calm days. But I would leave that in the hands of the guides. I mean, they're huge bays. There are protected lagoons. And I think, again, barring a serious tropical storm, they will find you a lee shoreline. And otherwise, it's kind of difficult to predict which bay. These are all very large bays. There are lodges on one side, for example, that come in from the north side. And then there's lodges over at the opening on the south side on Punta Pajaros. And there are islands out at the opening of the bay, all very good fishing features. And the guides, I suspect, would be planning that the night before. Where is the best lee shoreline in this kind of brisk offshore wind that we're getting?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk with Phil Shook more about Mexico's Grand Slam Expressway. Captain Bob Jaspers of Flats Time Charters will introduce you to the Mosquito Lagoon, Indian River, and No Motor Zone of the Banana River on the east coast of Central Florida. Only a short drive from Orlando, you will sight fish for big redfish, spotted sea trout, and black drum, as well as a seasonal snook and tarpon. Captain Bob is a lifetime resident of the area, and it shows in his knowledge of the local fish, flora, and fauna. Call Flats Time Charters now and arrange your next memorable adventure. You can reach Captain Bob Jaspers at 321-631-4051. That's 321-631-4051. Or go to the website at www.flatstime.com. That's FLATSTIME.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Phil Shook about Mexico's Grand Slam Expressway. If you'd like to ask Phil a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to ask your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, Phil, I always ask my guests, you know, what's going on in your fly fishing world? I guess the Fly Fisher's Guide to Mexico was a big part of your recent work, right?
Absolutely. No, it was a lot of fun to do that. I've met some great guides and captains in Mexico and anglers. They were very supportive and generous, and I got a chance to visit the country when I was a boy and more recent years on assignments to many of the coasts of Mexico and a number of trips to the Yucatan. So that was a project that was a lot of fun to do, and it's great to go back to some of those places. Obviously, I didn't go to every single place, but I found some expert anglers who have done that, and so I'm happy that people are getting a chance to take part in that adventure down there, which is just, I think, endless opportunities.
You know, you, I take it you like the research part of this, right?
Yes.
Water research part?
Absolutely. And
The tax deductibility of this research work?
Right. Well, all of those are great. It's the return on the investment that sometimes I have to, explain to my wife, and it's not.
Yeah, but I'm sure she got a few trips out of this, too, right?
Oh, yes. Well, I mentioned that we just went down to Tulum, which is an incredible destination, and the Mayan fortress there on the ocean, and it's become kind of a gourmet food capital because chefs are going there, and so it's a place where the whole family can do different things. They have these wonderful cenotes, or these caves, and diving and swimming and snorkeling in these limestone caves, which are characteristic of this part of the world, and not to mention the beautiful beaches. And so you can sneak off when people are shopping and get in some flats fishing or fishing just along in front of your hotel on those deeper ocean flats, which is very good.
Right, right. Now, Phil, do you have a website or a way people can get in contact with you?
Yes, actually, it is philshook.com. Has some background on my books and my feature stories. I might mention that I just, in the current issue of American Angler, there is a feature story I've done on that very same family trip, which talks about the options there in the Riviera Maya, and taking side trips to Cozumel and going over on your own, kind of do-it-yourself approach into the famous Siancan biosphere. So that might fill in some of the blanks, as well as the guidebook, as you were kind enough to mention.
Sure.
But remember, we have seven different coasts in Mexico. The West Coast, I know you've had Gary Bula and other anglers who have gone to Campeche in Mexico, and it's just a great adventure to talk about.
Right, right, right. Good, good. So you brought up Tulum and the family adventure there. You know, as we talk about these different areas, I'd like you to, kind of insert that. I wonder whether it areas family friendly or things to do or a place that's really just for fly fishing, that kind of thing. So so you already mentioned Tulum. Let's work our way down. You have three primary destinations that we're going to talk about tonight, and then there's the coastline in between. So those three primary destinations are, tell us.
Yes, well, you can kind of put them as far as the perspective of the angler, the fly fisherman, and look at the route down 307 where you have the big bays, and that would start with Ascension Bay and that marine park called Siancan. So that would be the first destination. And then if you get a little more adventurous, the farther you go south, you pass, you go south from the Riviera Maya through an area called the Zona Maya, which is really actually just a kind of jungle in between the Riviera Maya and the Costa Maya. Now, the Costa Maya gets interesting because there are some fly fishing lodges down there, and it is, you can approach the second big bay, which is the Espiritu Santo Bay. They have, I mentioned, there is a fly fishing lodge which is on the Caribbean, and it is near the town of Mahawal, which is a port for luxury liners. But this is really getting down into the southernmost area and near Belize. But from those lodges, you can go north and then trailer a boat and fish the jungle lagoons along the beach road. And then Espirito Santo is less traveled than Ascension Bay. There's a half a dozen or more fly fishing lodges on Ascension Bay. There's access to Espirito Santo, but not really that much traffic. So it's certainly been explored at all ends, but it offers, you may not see another flats boat in the course of the day. Then also going south on that road, which is runs east from 307 that goes over to the beach, to the Caribbean beachfront, you would go south to a little town called Ishkalak. And there are a few hotels and lodges there. And you're actually on you fish a small part of Chetumal Bay. And you could actually, if you wanted to, travel in your boat to a national park in Belize. So you're down there right on the border with Belize. So those would be the three destinations going south that are attractive because, again, you have the Grand Slam species everywhere. You have jungle lagoons with a baby tarpon and snook, and you have lodges that have flats boats and pongos with very experienced guides. So your choices might be, I've fished Ascension Bay. I would like to go down to Ishkalak to see what it's like to fish that huge Chetumal Bay. And
now, is that when you're talking about these three areas, if you're in Ascension Bay, the lodge there is going to service Ascension Bay, right? You can't expect them to throw the boat on and go down to Chetumal or
somewhere. Right. Well, again, you've got so much going on there on Ascension Bay, it's not something you're going to worry about. For example, when you set out from Punta Allen, where there are several lodges, one of the first features you hit is called Cayo Culebra, which is a island kind of at the opening to Ascension Bay. And it is very good for tarpon and permit, little deeper flats around it. And then you proceed across the bay to a lot of the bonefish flats. So what I'm saying is that you're really got all you can handle there. You're not being left out. But what's kind of exciting when you get down in the Costa Maya, at some of these, at the lodges in the far southern end at Ishkalak, and up near Mahawal at Paradise Lodge, you have some choices there. You have the open Caribbean, which on some days you could even go out and sight cast there. But your main choices are going to be these 8 or 10 jungle lagoons, which run along the road, one that's almost right across from the lodge. So it gives you kind of an exciting adventure of opportunity, and it gives you the choice. For example, if Espirito Santo Bay has been fishing very well, you might want to take a day trip up and fish that. That involves some effort because you're going to be, these roads are only 30 or 40 miles, but on a jungle road that's just been cut out of the jungle, it takes a while, and there are checkpoints, but it's part of the adventure. So you could, depending on the type of adventure you want, in 5 or 6 days of fishing, you can bring a little variety in it when you go south into the Costa Maya.
Okay. Let's talk, we'll come back to these areas because I want to dig in a little bit deeper to each one of these areas. But
sure,
we do have some questions about equipment and flies going down to this area. And I guess let's just stick to, tarpon, permit, bonefish, snook kind of when we're talking. We won't talk about blue water because that's another whole world.
Right.
But Roy, actually we had Roy Fukushima from Orange, California again asked, what assortment of fly rods and fly lines are required to get the job done if you want to do the Grand Slam? What do you need to bring, or do you need to bring anything with the guide services down there?
Well, good question. I think fly fishers probably should bring their own tackle. Some of the lodges have, some of the high-end lodges might have tackle to rent, but I would want to have everything, my equipment, especially when it comes to fly tackle. Now, light spin tackle, which some people can do, they might be a little better equipped. But I would bring my own fly tackle. And what the fly fishers that go year after year, what you discover, like a first trip to Ascension Bay, it's overwhelming because it's the beauty of the place. This is where the Mayans say the sky was born, because you look out across this beautiful turquoise bay, and it's almost seamless. You can't see where the bay ends and the sky begins, so you can see where they came up with that. But the fishing rises to the occasion also, and what you realize is that you probably could have, I know everybody doesn't have a half a dozen fly rods. I think if you took two fly rods, probably 2 8-weights, you would be in good shape. But what you realize is you could have 3 or 4 fly rods rigged differently between two anglers. For example, your bonefish rod, maybe an 8-weight or a 7-weight for the bonefish, you want maybe a little longer leader and small flies, maybe even eyeless flies, maybe even size 8s. For these big schools of smaller bonefish, which are typical in the Yucatan and in Ascension Bay. It doesn't mean there's not big bonefish, but that's kind of a separate deal of big game hunting, like the permit, where you would stalk them along the shorelines of the little deeper flats. So we would want that bonefish rod, and then we would probably have about a 10-pound tippet on that. But then we want to have our permit rod. We want to have a larger rag head permit fly, so that might even be on a 10-weight or 9-weight. These permit have pretty big shoulders, so you'd want to have that already rigged. The last thing you want to do is to start rigging up when a permit pops up and trying to rig up your bonefish rod. So we've got our permit rod, and we've got our bonefish rod. Then we want that all-purpose 8-weight with maybe a 40-pound bite tippet. That's for tarpon. That's for the jack crevel. That's for our snapper. We've got 3 or more species of snapper that are a lot of fun when you're casting along the mangrove. So that's kind of our all-purpose rod when the tarpon and snook pop up. So we've got 3 right there, and guess what? Then these big barracuda will show up, and sharks. So they're a lot of fun, but you're going to need, 6 inches or so of wire, coated wire. So it's not out of the question that you could have 4 rods rigged. I'm not saying everybody has to do that. I think the 8-weight rod that you're comfortable with, that you can cast well, that you can develop some line speed casting in these situations, are going to be fine. Maybe your 8-weight you would use all day. But this is a place, because of the numbers of fish and because of the quality of these game fish, and where it wouldn't be out of the question to want to have 3 or 4 rods rigged and ready to go.
And are you primarily using floating fly lines? Is that all you really need to have?
Yes. Well, I think that's the first choice. Certainly, when you're fishing the shallower flats, it is the most user-friendly, and I like a high float, weight-forward floating line. It's going to work for you well. I also, however, like to have a clear intermediate weight-forward line. I think it's very, during the course of the day, as I mentioned, with different, maybe on the tarpon rod, I find that very flexible and getting a little bit of sink rate, because in the course of the day, you're going to see features change so much. You can be in a very shallow flat where that floating line is perfect, but you're talking about little creeks. You're talking about they might even pull up to one of these cenotes, which is in the middle of the bay. Suddenly there's a spring welling up. It's a different color. You might want to drop a weighted fly on your clear intermediate down there to catch some tarpon, the snapper, or even a cobia could be there. So it's I like to have an intermediate sink, but your go-to for the bonefish, which is the most prolific species and a lot of fun, is your floating lines.
Now, we've got some other questions. Doug McLean in Calgary, Alberta asked about specifically about what size tarpon are you likely to encounter, and what size rod are you recommending for them? Now, are the tarpon different sizes between the different bays, or are they all pretty
different? Well, that's, again, a good question. Most of the tarpon, the nature of the life cycle and the tarpon that you see in the Yucatan are juvenile tarpon. This doesn't mean they're, I mean, it can be up to 40 pounds, but most of the tarpon you're going to encounter in these lagoons and in these mangrove backcountry shorelines are what we call baby tarpon. Now, these are beautiful fish. Maybe they're 2 or 3 years old, and they're 2.5, 3-footers, and, you know, they can be 8, 10, 15-pounders, and the little larger ones would be 40-pounders, which are caught in some of the lagoons. But for the most part, these are juvenile tarpon. So they're very sporty on 8-weight. Again, use 40-pound shock tippet. They have very hard mouth. They'll grind down. Even a strike will kind of grind down your tippet, so you want to have at least 40-pound test bite tippet there, and I think the 8-weights are just fine. Now, there are times of the year. In fact, just recently I had a friend from Texas Coast, a guide, Billy Trimble, who just had a terrific trip down to Ascension Bay and had landed permit and bonefish and tarpon. And he said while they were there, now this doesn't happen all the time, the people that go down there a lot look for this period when large tarpon are migrating through around the deeper, just off the mouth of the Big Bay, Ascension Bay. They're coming by and people get a shot at them. These are mature, you know, 100-pound class, 6-foot class fish, and it's nice to have a 12-weight if, you know, with you when you happen to hit it right. But I would say for the most part that happens just now and then, and your best bet is to have that 8-weight for the baby tarpon, which are great, great sport. Beautiful.
Do the tarpon, do you see more mature tarpon down in Belize than up in Mexico?
I have not made that many trips to Belize. I've talked to people. I think it's fairly similar. I know, again, that, you know, in the deeper water in the coast, there are migrations, but I think back on the flats and in the rivers, you also have the smaller tarpon. And Campeche is known for the same thing. However, they can get up. There are days when, you know, 40-pound tarpon is a load on an 8-weight or even a 10-weight. So, but it is not known. The only place I know in Mexico, and at least in the Yucatan, is Holbox, where those are typically 70 to 100-plus fish. They're unless you go back in the lagoons there where the same baby tarpon hang out, the fish that you're going to catch out in the open water that are schooling up on the tracking those sardines that come there are big tarpon. That's a place where you want to have your 12-weight tackle on any trip, and only your 8-weight for going back in the lagoons. But your first choice of the day is those bigger fish.
Okay. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back. We'll talk about flies for that area. So hang tight, everybody. We'll be right back. Women's Fly Fishing in Alaska is owned and operated by well-known female guide Pudge Kleinkopf. Women's Fly Fishing offers several lodge-based fly fishing schools for women, as well as an array of small group-guided trips for women and couples to some of Alaska's best-known waters for salmon, rainbow trout, Arctic grayling, and char. Pudge also leads saltwater fly fishing groups to Mexico each spring. Beginners are welcome, and equipment is provided. Learn more about fly fishing for women at womensflyfishing.net. That's womensflyfishing.net. Or call Pudge at 907-274-7113. That's 907-274-7113. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Phil Shook about Mexico's Grand Slam Expressway. If you'd like to ask Phil a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com. And use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, so here's a question from the Internet, Phil, that came in from another Phil, McCartney, Kentucky. And he wants to know what sort of license requirements does one face in fishing the areas down there?
That is pretty easy and not that complicated. No license is required for fishing from the shore. So if you're doing a do-it-yourself and you're fishing out in front of your hotel on an ocean flat in Tulum or down on the Caribbean coast, or just maybe you're taking a day off from a guided trip at one of the lodges in Punta Allen and going fishing along the Punta Allen Road, you do not need a license. You do need a license on a boat. However, I think in about 99% of the cases, that is taken care of for you by the lodge operator. It is worth checking in to asking about that when you sign up for a lodge package, but I think that is generally the situation.
What's your experience been out on the water of any authorities coming by to check things like that?
That, I guess, has been close to zero. Let me think. I actually think a few times, maybe in Holbosch, they have people come by and just say hello. I think they do monitor they monitor some of the commercial fishermen in some of these areas, but I haven't seen it much. I mean, the lodge operators know the park rangers so well. And everything is so closely regulated. For example, in the Siam Khan, which is the big national marine park that encloses Ascension Bay and Espiritu Santo Bay, everything is very carefully regulated. You don't have any kind of launch ramp where a private fisherman or a private person can launch a boat. That all the motorized skiffs are licensed. Every lodge has X number. So it is, it is very carefully watched there, that pristine estuary, and protected, and things going on all the time. But I don't see a lot of enforcement. I guess we all would like more of it on our waters. But and of course, it's all catch and release, and you're having people there that are very attuned to conservation. I mean, the fly fishermen. So something you see. You know, it is Mexico, and you have military patrols and things going down the beaches, which in some cases you're glad to see.
Yeah. Well, I know I've been in Canada, and I've been on a little back bay on a 250,000-acre lake, and, around the corner here comes a
exactly.
Ranger.
Well, that's been my luck. I will find the one warden, and I'm glad he's doing his job, and I support him.
Yeah.
But, yes, I can find him like a magnet, I guess.
Yeah, you never know. So let's talk about flies. We had several questions about flies. Jason in Ashland, Kentucky, Mark in Austin, Texas, and Doug in Calgary, Alberta. So they're all asking about, what kind of flies to take down there for the different, like the three species we've talked about. Is there a standard set, go-to flies?
Well, again, if you have done some fishing in Florida or the Bahamas, I think you probably... fly fisherman has some of his favorite flies, and they're going to work well. And you know how it is. We have flies that have worked for us, and we have carefully, gone through, brought dozens, tied our own flies, and bring boxes with dozens of flies. And then the first thing that the captain tells you is he wants you to use his fly. So that is pretty typical. However, the, good bonefish flies, are going to work. Crazy Charlies, bead chain Charlies, Clouser deep minnows, tan and white, olive white. Some that I like are Greg Mahave shrimp patterns, bonefish specials, the Enrico Puglisi gotchas. I have my favorites, and you will find it's pretty consistent that a good fly pattern is going to work, especially when you have a place like this where you're going to get the opportunities. You find out how good flies can be when the fishing when the numbers of fish are on this level. Now, then we're talking, that's for bonefish, and we're talking, they've developed some flies down there. Casablanca Lodge has a big raghead fly that has worked well for permit, a little larger crab patterns. Dale's Merkin, the Dale Brown Special, they're classic patterns from the Florida Keys that you want to be throwing at those permit when they pop up. And again, tarpon, snook, and jacks, we talked about having a rod that's works for those targets, and that would be the Black Death is just about the only fly you need to take to a place like Holbosch. They love that fly. The captains like the fly, and so do the tarpon. So a Black Death, Purple Death, Grizzly Deceiver, the Mayan Warrior, which looks a lot like the Black Death, except some of the guides down there have come up with it. I like the Monomoy flat wing. Crease flies are great for topwater action, yellow marabou. I like the Combs Sea Habit, which is kind of a mullet pattern. And, of course, the Puglisi peanut butter, the striper fly, purple and black and other colors, is very deadly for tarpon. So that would be a few of my choices. I'm sure there's many other favorites that people have that have worked for them that will probably work for this, for the Grand Slam species.
Yeah, great. Okay, let's come back to kind of work our way from Cancun on down to these areas, because I want to give people a really clear picture of what's available to them. And so, you know, when we're talking about going from Cancun to Tulum, and you mentioned that Tulum sounds like that's a real family-friendly area. In other words, you can go fishing and the family can do other things.
Oh, yes. No, it's a great beach destination and a lot of day trips and things to do. The Cenotes
is that,
the one.
Yeah, is you that go, your first stop on 307?
Right. That is like the first stage, because you are going about 80 miles in one of the most developed parts of the highway, 307. So this is the Mayan Riviera, which is on the map. I mean, it draws, I think 4.8 million visitors came through the Cancun airport last year, and probably a big part of them stayed in the Mayan Riviera, where you start in Cancun with all the luxury high-rise hotels, and then as you drive that 80 miles, you will find some big resorts on the Caribbean. Playa del Carmen is about, I think that's about 40 miles down. That is another beach destination. But 80 miles down the road is Tulum, and that has the special attraction of the famous Mayan fortress on the cliff. It's very spectacular and draws thousands of people a day to see, but also wonderful beach hotels. They have a hotel zone on the Caribbean with great restaurants, and this is also the gateway, near the gateway, to the Siancan biosphere, and they have tours back through the mangroves and bird watching, and this is also the gateway for anglers, to the fly fishers, to get to the lodges in Punta Allen. Punta Allen is actually kind of part of the municipality of Tulum, so it's kind of like a suburb. But to get there, you feel like you're really going into the jungle, believe me, when you go down the famous Punta Allen Road. So there's a lot going on in and around Tulum, and it's very easy to get there. You could rent a car and do it on your own, as we did, or you can have your lodge owner pick you up and take you.
Now, as you so from Tulum, you would be staying in more of a resort-type hotel rather than a fishing lodge. And am I correct on that?
That's correct. The lodges might pick you up. They can pick you up. They'll come over, and you could do a day trip. So if you want to go with your family and just wanted to do one or two trips, there are lodges like Pescamaya, which are over in the Siancan on Ascension Bay. They will come pick you up. But, yes, you're right.
Okay.
The Tulum is a tourist area with a broad appeal to the angler and non-angler alike.
Okay. Well, it's good to know that you could do, a day trip out of there. That's really good to know. Now, is there any do-it-yourself fishing from Tulum on down to Punta Allen, if you had your own car? I noticed there's several lagoons on the way down.
Yes. It's very interesting, because that's what the story is about in the current issue of American Angler. That is using Tulum as kind of your headquarters for do-it-yourself fishing, starting with right out in front of your hotel to driving in to the park. Now, the park, to get to the Siancan, you will drive through the hotel district and restaurant district of Tulum. It's a highway that intersects 307. It goes to the west to Merida, and then it goes south to the entrance to the Siancan biosphere, where you stop and pay $4 to get in. Now, I took several trips, and anyone can do it, drive into down the road, 12 or so miles, to what they call the Boca Paya Bridge. And it's near one of the oldest lodges in the Caribbean, Boca Paya. It's a very popular lodge that's, again, you could stay there or you could have them pick you up to fish a day or two. But this is a estuary, an inlet that opens up into the Caribbean. And Boca Paya is another smaller bay, kind of near Ascension Bay. It's a very good bonefish flat. But the traveler, the day traveler, just going in, we used to be able to fish these flats, just get out near the bridge, walk down the trail to the opening of the inlet. Very good casting there for everything, the big three, a permit, tarpon, and bonefish. However, that is now banned by the park rangers for a good reason, and that is because they have these giant crocodiles that now patrol there. You leave them alone and they leave you alone, but they don't want you taking that trail, nor do they want you walking in where you can see a part of Boca Paya Lagoon and flats fishing that would be very good. However, as you go down that road, there's many stops that are on the Caribbean. Very pretty. People get out. That fishing is open to everyone. It can be very good. This is what we call the ocean flats because they're a little deeper than the big bays, the shallow bonefish flats. However, all kinds of stuff comes by, giant barracuda, you could have schools of snook, tarpon. And these ocean flats are protected by an offshore reef where you can almost see it. And so on certain days when you have light winds, you have your own flat there. And there's several places to stop. So that's where the do-it-yourselfer can have quite an adventure in a very remote area that you're not necessarily going to see anybody else. It's very safe. And you can drive in there and then drive back. You could do that just in the morning and can be very good fly fishing action there.
Okay. Good. Now, one question that came in on the internet here, Rob in Ridgewood, he says he mentioned several do-it-yourself trips. Is there any cause for concerns for safety given U.S. travel advisories?
Well, certainly safety is a natural question when going to Mexico. The Yucatan has a record of being a very safe destination even during the 9-year war between the government and the transnational gangs, the cartels. It has a reputation of being very safe. I've never really had that on my mind when I'm traveling. You experienced travelers that you use caution. You have people pick you up. You know where you're going. You don't travel at night. So that is not a concern, but of course every traveler has to be aware of that. The U.S. State Department monitors different areas, and the Yucatan is not one that they have any advisories on. As I mentioned, 4.8 million visitors to this part of Mexico last year. So the paradox is that despite all the headlines and the terrible price that Mexico is paying in this war because of the demand for drugs in the U.S., there's still areas it's still one of the most popular countries to visit. And I would say that talking about safety and security, the things that should be a concern when people are going to Mexico for the first time would be like overexposure to the sun. People, that can surprise people. The overindulgence in tropical alcoholic drinks, especially when balconies of the high-rise resort hotels are involved, there's actually been maybe more fatalities from that than accidentally encountering the cartels. Then observing speed limits, they'd be ready to stop for pedestrians, animals, speed bumps, police and military checkpoints. So I put that on my list, but it's a very safe. Ironically, it's kind of hard to get. I mentioned that we went in January, and it's, unless you plan ahead, it's hard to find a hotel at the last minute. It's so popular. So that gives a sense of security. Many people not only have a safe trip, but they have a memorable trip to this part of Mexico.
Right. Now, So staying in Tulum could be a very family-friendly thing with day trips for fishing and so forth. If you stay in one of the lodges in Punta Allen, now is that a place for a family, or is that just for fly fishers, would you say?
Well, it certainly could be a place for a family because they have all kinds of nature trips. I know families that live there and love it that run some of the lodges. But it is a fishing village, starting with the commercial lobster fishermen, and it is one of the most, you know, per square foot, probably has more fly fishing lodges than any other because they have like a half a dozen lodges there. So it really is a destination for the hardcore angler, but that could be a family. I mean, that it's a beautiful place. You're in the heart of the Siam Khan. There's a lot of things to do, and I think if I could talk my wife into it, I think she would love it because they have trips up the Mayan canals, the old white roads through the jungle, and there's just incredible wildlife there, from jaguars to anteaters to howler monkeys. I mean, it is a place, but yeah, for the most part, you're going to find the typical traveling American angler who's there for the 7 days.
How do they
5 days on the
water?
How
do the guides? Yeah, how do the guides charge for, let's say you bring your wife down and she's not a, or your husband, either way, and they're not, right, a fly fisher. Do they charge for that person on the boat, or are they just the passenger, or if they just want to spend the day on
the boat? Well, I think some of them have, they have the rate for the non-fishing spouse. I'm sure you could get some, special rate for that. Now, I know, for example, over at the Casablanca Lodge, which is one of the more upscale, one of the most famous lodges in the Americas. I mean, it has some outpost camps or outpost lodges like Casa Redonda or Playa Blanca. That's where your family can stay. You can actually book that, and they have a chef there. They have a kitchen. So you're kind of removed. You might be over on the Espiritu Santo side. So that would be something where you have kayaks and so you literally have your own remote island almost, or part of it. So you could arrange that. But again, I think most lodges in Mexico and Belize have a non-fishing spouse. As far as getting in the boat, I think you pay the normal rate. You know, you're taking up a place of an angler, so I think you would pay the normal rate for that day, but a non-fishing spouse might enjoy the day as much as somebody who is trying to cast,
yeah,
to frustration of casting to a big permit. You wouldn't,
yeah,
have that.
Do they normally take two?
Yes, that's a good question, because the typical craft is, now they have Florida-style flats boats, shallow running flats boats, but the typical craft down there is the Panga. It's kind of a roomy 18-20-foot skiff that is the workhorse fishing boat for the commercial fishermen, as well as the guides, and they're very seaworthy on the open bays. They can go in fairly shallow water, and there's usually two anglers and a captain. However, they have started a little bit. I heard from my friend who just got back, my friend from Texas, who said that they were putting a mate in there who can help in spotting the fish. And I know for some reason down in the Costa Maya, I mentioned Ixcalac and a few of those down in the far south near Belize, that is the normal way they do it out of on Chetumal, that they always have a younger mate who is helping spot fish, and you can have four in the boat, including the captain and the head guy.
Okay, I want to move on, but I did get some questions from Doug in Calgary about guides or lodges you would recommend. So, just talking about Ascension Bay, can you recommend two or three?
They're really a lot of very good lodges, different price ranges. I think the price range, again, we're talking about a whole week and five guided days. So Casablanca would be on the upper end of that, and just treat yourself if you get a chance to go to Casablanca. Now, in Punta Allen, you have, I mentioned, Bocapaya Lodge, which is one of the old, is the oldest lodge down there. It was, and is on the road to Punta Allen. And then you have Pesca Maya. You have Palmetto Lodge that I mentioned. I think there's one called Casa Viejo Shack, which I've had friends stay there. It's not on the water, but it gets very good reviews. And there's, I really, there's not a bad lodge there. And just being there, you're going to be ahead. And you can, in the past years, I don't know if this is still the case, but there used to be a lodge called Kusan Guest House. It was there for years. And you could literally, if you just wanted to stay there for the night, and you could pay, you know, $35 to $75 and stay in a beach palapa. And maybe rent one day, I went there for just one night, and I chartered a boat for a half day for about $150. I was there by myself. I mean, you couldn't have, I had a shot at the Grand Slam. I caught a tarpon and a bonefish. Didn't quite get the permit, but these are the kind of things, if you looked into it, you might be able to do this on a night or two, or do the whole lodge package.
Okay. Let's move on down the coast to Espiritu Santo Bay. And you had said earlier that you're going to get the Grand Slam in any one of these bays, basically.
You have,
right?
Well, I didn't say you're going to get but you have a chance.
You have a chance.
You have a chance at it, right.
Yeah, you have a chance at it. So the fishing, what makes it different than Ascension Bay?
Is that everybody wants something a little wilder and a little more remote. Now, that Ascension Bay fulfills all of that. There are places in Ascension Bay which I don't think that visitors are even allowed to go, where the park rangers and the local people manage the wildlife and fish and commercially for the lobsters. So it's wild enough. But the thing about Espiritu Santo is it really is more difficult to access. So, of course, that always makes it more intriguing, and people want to go there. I know that my friend Trapper Rudd, who has been on this program, he's a widely traveled outfitter. He has taken in groups, and maybe out of Casablanca, but they go down the road to those remote satellite lodges that I mentioned with Casablanca Lodge, that Casablanca Lodge offers, and they go back with a panga and kayaks. So they go into Espiritu Santo Bay, so they fish some of the backcountry creeks and shorelines that are really just not fished very often at all. And I remember him telling me that this is an area where you can get out and stand on a little estuary, mouth of a little inlet, and you can cast and catch and hook tarpon from the shore. So that's what maybe that bay offers. And another anecdote from Trapper Rudd, which kind of explains what's intriguing about Espiritu Santo Bay, he said that he was with a guide on Espiritu Santo Bay in some of the back country, and they went in a little entrada that opened up in a flat, and he caught, Trapper had just an amazing day, caught four or five a permit in one day. That's just a phenomenal day for any angler. And he asked the guide at the end of the day, he said, "What's the name of this flat?" And the guide looked at him and he said, "I don't know. I've never been here before." So that kind of tells you. So now that's named Trapper's Flat, I believe. But that tells you why it's kind of fun to, I mean, intriguing to go to Espiritu Santo because it's a little harder to get to. It has been explored. Anglers have been there, but it's just not, you're probably not likely to see another boat. And it's a big.
Would you say the lodges there are less pricey than Ascension Bay?
Well, it happens. I believe Paradise Lodge, for whatever reason, is one of the lower, you know, it's like 2100 or something, I think. Maybe perhaps because it's a pretty good hidey-ho to get there from the airport. I don't know what the reason is. It's a very nice lodge right on the Caribbean, and it is offers a variety, but perhaps because it is a pretty good distance that it's kind of in the lower range of the week-long package.
Okay. So, and then moving on down to Chetumal, what makes it different?
Chetumal, yes. That's fascinating. I have really just interviewed people. I have not been to Ishkalak, or have I fished on Chetumal. I have many friends that have, and I've interviewed them. I feel like I have a pretty good understanding of it. Now, Chetumal, you have to understand, is so big, you could put Ascension Bay and Espiritu Santo Bay inside it and still have lots of room. When I ask guides about fishing, you know, how big is Chetumal, they just roll their eyes back in their head. So when you go to Ishkalak, you've got very good water to fish, but you're fishing a tiny part of it. And it is very interesting. The other side of the big bay is the city of Chetumal, which is a working city, not really known as a tourist destination. They do a lot of trade and business with Belize and Central and South America, and I understand it has a wonderful Mayan art museum in Chetumal. But I've talked to guides that say even on that side you could go fish up in the northern end of that big bay, and that there are mature tarpon, big tarpon up there. So that is certainly a bay that has hardly been touched. Again, Trapper, I think probably of all the friends that we know that travel in Mexico and elsewhere, he might know some of those backcountry areas of Chetumal. But it is a huge bay, and that's intriguing about it. They have those little hotels and lodges in Ishkalak, so you get a taste of it.
How do you get there? How do you get to Ishkalak?
You get to Ishkalak by taking 307, and as you get down south, there's as you head south about 160 miles, there is a little town called Limones, and there's one Pemex station, I believe, that's just south of there. And then you have a road that heads east that you take. It's well marked, and that is to Mahahual, which is one of the bigger communities right there on the coast, and it's a little coast road there. Mahahual is well known because luxury cruise liners stop there, and then it becomes a big city for a couple of days. But north and south of Mahahual are these little communities like Placer, where they have the other Paradise Lodge, and where you can go north to Espiritu Santo Bay, or you go south from Mahahual down a beach road and you get to Ishkalak, which is...
Oh,
again,
so there is a road. Yeah, I'm looking on Google Maps and I don't see a road.
Yeah.
That's why I was wondering.
Well, right. It's not much of a road, I think, but it is it is traveled somewhat. There are people that go regularly and stay at those hotels. They have package fishing there. And, again, it's very intriguing. You fish, again, similar beautiful bonefish flats where you have a shot at the baby tarpon and the permit.
Yep.
And you're not that far. You actually could get a permit through your guide and go and fish. And I think it's mentioned in the guidebook, the name of the national park in Belize. So you could have a little taste of Belize. But most of the anglers fish around that bay. There's just so much to take on, and you don't have to go that far to find a good bonefish flat in Ishkalak.
Yeah, good. Now, I just noticed on the map down near Ishkalak, they mentioned a dive center too. So in any of these areas that we've talked about, is there any good diving or snorkeling?
Yes. Actually, these are some of the most famous reefs in the Caribbean. Just I believe it's just east of Mahahual. If you look there, you see the Chichorro, I think it's Chichorro Bank. And that's a very famous dive area. And that's a lobster fishing area. But also, and I keep bringing up Trapper Rudd's name because he's always like the first person in, and he's found some bone fishing flats. That's a pretty good distance offshore, so weather issues. Mm-hmm. But the Chichorro Bank is a famous reef for diving and attracts all kinds of offshore and flats species. So that would be and Cozumel, we mentioned, which is near Playa del Carmen, midway from Cancun to Tulum. That is a very famous dive area as well as snorkeling. Famous underwater parks there, and it has some lagoons, some very attractive lagoons on it. And that's part of a do-it-yourself, a day trip from Tulum also. I didn't mention that long.
Yeah, you can take the ferry over.
Yes, take the ferry over from Playa del Carmen. That's quite an adventure day.
Yeah, Playa del Carmen. I mean, Palancar Reef is,
Oh, yeah, right. Palancar is at Cozumel, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, one final question here from Roy, Orange, California again. He says, definitely high on my list of saltwater fly fishing destinations, talking about this area. He says, as I hear, accommodations are more affordable than Belize, Costa Rica, Panama, and other tropical fly fishing destinations below our border. In detail, would you, what would the total cost per week stay be? And he says from Southern Cal, but of course, disregarding the airline tickets, what is the price range? Let's start, you know, like, what would a day, if you were to do a day out of Tulum, what would that cost you?
And yeah, that's
say you're
a good...
just a single fly fisher that the, your significant other doesn't want to fly fish and you're getting the boat for yourself.
Right. Well, again, we talked about the package deals, and again, it sounds, I still think Mexico is a bargain when you compare it with, you know, great places in Florida and in the tropics, so that Mexico can offer a variety of packages. And again, we talked about the upper end lodges like Casablanca, you know, can be in the 3,800, 4,000 plus even, and then you have down on the lower end, 2,500 perhaps. But again, these are packages, 7 days, five guided days. But, for example, my family, we stayed at a very nice lodge, Pavo Real, which is on Tonka Bay, which is part of the Tulum National Park, just right near, not far from the Tulum ruins. And that was, if you broke that down, that was like $150 a day per room for a double room. That is with three meals and open bar. So this is, you know, that would be, but then you could book a guide. You could find a guide to come pick you up, and maybe that would be $150. $200, so you could package something like that. But the all-inclusive lodges, which I had not stayed at before, I mean, when you consider $150, you can hardly, you know, get a motel on the
floor. So that was an all-inclusive.
That.
And
this comes with very nice buffet meals, three meals a day in the lodge, and entertainment, and a beautiful beach. And so,
let me clarify that, though. When you say $150 a day, all-inclusive, are you talking about for two people or for one
For
person?
Two people, correct. For two,
for two people.
People.
Okay.
Right,
okay.
For two people.
Ah, yeah. And then when you said a guide
for... It's priced by the room. So if you get a double room, I imagine if you're with your fishing partner, it would be the same $150, I assume that.
What do you mean a double room?
Well, I meant if you got a single room there, if you're just traveling alone as a angler,
as a couple,
you know,
yeah,
it's going to be $150. If you travel with your wife, it's a double. You know, I mean, so if two people, it's going to be $150. I probably made this more complicated than it needs to be.
Yeah. So you and your wife, it's going to be $150
correct,
a night, all
correct.
Inclusive. Yeah.
Correct.
Then you said a guide might cost you $150 to $250 a day.
I think it's in that $200 range. Again, you could, if you broke down the, you know, again, those, I was talking about the $4,000 packages and the $2,500 packages, when you break down the lodging, food, and guides, I think that would come out pretty reasonable. And, but again, I have, you know, negotiated a $150 trip, half-day trip, and on Ascension Bay, that's a whole lot of fishing, and I don't think it's much more than $200, $250, some of the $275 for two people, that some
That's
of those
not
day
bad
trips
at all.
Like Pescamaya. I would check Pescamaya Lodge, because they're the ones that do the pickup, and so the overall cost might be a little more than that, but I think you can get a
yeah.
very good when
well,
you're talking
compared
about
to,
$500.
Trip.
Excuse
yeah.
me, go ahead.
That's what I was going to say. The last trip I did out of Key West for tarpon was $550.
Well, exactly. So. Very good guides are in the Texas coast, for example, it's $500, $450, $500 is pretty
yeah.
typical. I think you can beat that. I might be going a little low when I say $200, $250, but I certainly think you can get a little better deal. And again, it's great guides in both cases, but you might do a little better in the Yucatan.
Okay. Well, good. Well, we're out of time here, and but I think we covered most of the bases here.
Hope so.
Yeah, I don't know how you did this book on the total of Mexico. That's a huge project, but exciting too and fun, I bet. We got to wind this up, so stick with me here, Phil. We're going to give away some prizes. We're going to give a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, and a copy of your book, Fly Fisher's Guide to Mexico, courtesy of Wilderness Adventures Press. So let's stick with me here just a couple more minutes, and we'll get those prizes out, and we'll call it a night. Family Ties, that's T-Y-E-S. Family Ties is an organization which uses a shared interest in fly fishing and fly tying to enhance youth development and family relationships. They utilize resources in schools, communities, and businesses, and they invite your participation. Go to their website at www.familyties.com. That's family, T-Y-E-S.com. Family Ties, where every fish is a trophy and every kid is a hero. Now, just a quick reminder to everyone before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, "What did you think of this show?" Just click on that link, leave your comments, we'd really appreciate it. Okay, now, time to give away a few prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from our show's registration database. Now, if you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for our next show. You don't want to miss out on a lot of these great prizes we have to give away, so make sure you get registered. If you are the lucky winner, we'll contact you after the show and provide you with the information on how to receive your gift. So, let's see. The first thing we're going to give away is the one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And to learn more about the Federation, go to fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org. And our winner for that is Greg Keem, K-E-I-M, Greg Keem in California. So congratulations, Greg, on winning that membership. And those of you that don't win tonight, you know, go check them out and see how valuable all the things that they are doing in conservation is. It's a great organization. Okay, so the next thing we'll give away is a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, which is courtesy of AmatoBooks.com. Find out more about the books and periodicals that Amato has. Go to AmatoBooks.com, AmatoBooks.com. Check them out. So let's see. Let me fire up the database again. And come on. Dean Wormell. Dean's won a lot of things on our show. I hope you don't have this already, Dean. If you do, let me know. And he's up in Massachusetts. So, Dean, congratulations on that one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal from Amato Books. Okay, now, got that done, and give away your book, Phil. So I'm going to ask a question here, and there was something we talked about near the Boca Paella. Is that Paella, Paella Bridge?
Boca Paella. Boca Paella.
Boca Paella.
Mouth of
by the Boca Paella Bridge. Phil said you used to be able to get out of your car and walk around and fish off the shore, but you can't anymore because there's what there? There's what there, and the rangers won't let you in. It has nothing to do with fly fishing, but it's a good thing to know because I wouldn't want a whatever biting at my heels. There's your hint. There we go. I got an answer. Large crocodiles. Is that it?
Bingo.
Bingo. So, Rob, Ridge in Ridgewood. Looks like your last name is Otten. So, Rob Otten, you just won yourself a copy of Phil Shook's book, Fly Fisher's Guide to Mexico. So now you got a good reason to go to Mexico. So not like you didn't have one before, but an even better one. So congratulations, and Rob, send me in the same text box, just send me over your address, your mailing address, so we can have Wilderness Adventures Press send you out a copy of Phil's book. So congratulations. Thanks for playing. Thanks for listening. And we had fun with that, so that's good. All right. That's Phil. Hey, thanks for being on the show tonight. It's a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure.
Talk with you. Yeah, it was glad you shared your experiences. It was. I'm just. I hope my girlfriend isn't listening tonight because it's one of her favorite parts of Mexico, and I know she wants to go there.
Go
so,
to Riviera Maya.
Yeah, now you got me fired up. Where she might be happy and I might be happy at the same time, which would be good. But thanks again for being on the show tonight.
Thank you, Roger. Enjoyed it.
Now, our next broadcast will be on July 1st, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And on that show, I'm going to interview Rick Takahashi, and our topic for the show will be terrestrials. Rick considers terrestrials one of the world's most effective patterns. It's a broad category of food, from land-dwelling insects to mice, and they are in almost every stream and lake around the world. Listen in to learn about tying and fishing terrestrials that will work no matter where you live. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Amato Books, and Wilderness Adventures Press, sorry, for sponsoring our show tonight. And don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com. Make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Hey, thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.